Last week we talked about a scam. It was elementary school students, and they scammed their classmate who had access to his New Year's money. He had collected New Year's money over, I assume, years, had access to about 1 million yen. And that 1 million yen, he then bought trinkets his friends brought to school and said they would increase in value and stuff. He bought like a token from like a tour at Nagoya Port or something like that. And these are like 500 yen, just stamped things. He bought a Canadian $10 bill, which they said would go up in value, which is just absolutely not true. The Canadian economy doesn't work that way. I kind of understand a kid getting taken. His classmates would be able to convince him, and he's trying to impress them and stuff. But then there is a secondary question. Why did this kid have access to 1 million yen? So my children's New Year's money goes into a bank account. They could get it, but it would be a process. They wouldn't just be taking it all out and giving it away willy-nilly for trinkets. Then you become an adult and you have access to your own money. And that's where people really can get scammed. And so this week, a woman in her 50s, she was on Instagram. Great place to be, you know, looking at the beautiful pictures that people put there. So on Instagram, directly, she received a message. Someone slid into her DMs, which is quite nice. And the message said, "Hello from the International Space Station." Now, scams can be very convincing. One that comes from an astronaut is more problematic for me. So if I was on Instagram and someone sent me a message that said, "Hello from the International Space Station," my first question would actually be, why are you sending messages from the International Space Station via Instagram to someone you don't know? Like, I would actually ask that question. Not because I think he's trying to scam me. It'd just be like, why are you doing this? Clearly, you have other avenues of communication. You have work to do. You have other things that need to be done. I mean, you should not be wasting your time, especially with a random person. Like, if we knew each other, if I knew an astronaut and someone pretended to be that astronaut who sent me a message, I might be convinced. But I don't know any astronauts. So if an astronaut sends me a message, I would be immediately suspicious. This poor woman was not. They got more messages. They were in contact for a while. And then the astronaut said, "The contract for the internet I use on Earth has expired. So, you know, I want your assistance. I need money to pay this bill." And you can see, again, this is where I'm always like, well, wait a minute. Why would you need a stranger to take care of that? If you can send a message to someone, you can send a message to a family member. Let's say that would be appropriate. You could send a message to the space agency. You are on the International Space Station, which I'm sure has access to the internet. That's how you're communicating with me now. So why not use that internet? There's a lot of things you could, that would already, again, a lot of red flags right there. And it's not even that I have let my earthly internet expire is the problem. It's, why are you asking a stranger to take care of it? You have coworkers, you have a space agency behind you, you have family. And this is known because this is someone impersonating an actual astronaut. What was his name? His name was Satoshi Furukawa. So he's just like a Japanese astronaut. So it's not like we don't know about this person. If you want to look him up on the internet, you could go to his Wikipedia page. You could go look about him on like JAXA. The Japanese Space Agency. You know, you can actually figure out, you could call JAXA on his behalf and say, "Hey, I got an Instagram DM from one of your astronauts who's saying he wants his internet hooked up." Okay. Then we get into the sort of science fiction element of this. And he says, "I have discovered an asteroid containing important elements and I need your help in transporting it." So now you're vital to his space mission. And so I have sympathy. I have a lot of sympathy. But this is one of those scams where it's like the ridiculousness of the nature of the situation makes itself apparent. But then I'm like, oh, I guess if you're caught up in the moment and this is a chance to feel important, this is a chance to feel like you're part of an international space mission. This is like every movie you've ever seen where like the nobody becomes special. I'm like, maybe that's what they're actually preying upon. And that actually weirdly in a moment gave me a lot more sympathy for the person who had sent over 900,000 yen in total. When the supposed astronaut asked for planetary shipping fees, if this had just been reversed, I would be okay with it. She sent the money and then got suspicious. If she got suspicious and then went to the police and the police said, send the money and we'll track it down or something, sure. But she sent the money and she's like, wait a minute. What's planetary shipping? And because he's on the International Space Station, couldn't they just put it on one of the shuttles that's bringing food up or bringing food down or bringing astronauts up or bringing astronauts down? Because they're going anyway. So just put the incredibly important and special element he's discovered in space on one of those. Now, there may be a lot more story here that he convinced her that, you know, it had to be kept secret or something like that. But when you have to pay planetary shipping, which obviously is going to be expensive, then you realize maybe the scam has gone too far. So she went to the police, she calls the police, and she says, Satoshi Furukawa has been communicating with me. I'm a little suspicious because he's asking me for planetary shipping fees. How much are they usually? And then the police are like, unfortunately, Satoshi Furukawa has already returned to Earth. Whoever you're speaking to is not on the International Space Station and has been scamming you. And I don't want to make fun of her too much, but I kind of want to make fun of her because it just involves astronauts in space. And it is such a... this is such a perfect fiction, I think, is what why... again, I oscillate between, oh my God, this is the funniest thing, to I feel so much sympathy for this poor lady who got scammed. We have to have something in place. Now, police are actually trying to do a good thing with AI in Japan, which is pretty cool. They want to have AI recognize phishing websites. So these are sites that try to look like financial institutions, and they try to get your passwords and login information for your bank. And then from there, they might be able to log into your bank and get access to your accounts and stuff. Currently, the system is based off reporting. So I get a suspicious email and I click a link that I shouldn't click and the website looks off or something feels off or I think I've been scammed. I have to go to the police and report it. One of the issues with being scammed is that people are embarrassed that they got scammed and they're less likely to report. So the number of reports of getting scammed is actually way less than the actual scam rate. This is why people who get scammed, we really shouldn't shame them. That's actually the exact opposite of what I kind of just did in the first story. So this is, I'm part of the problem. Because if they feel embarrassed, they might not report it. But they just got tricked. Yeah. I now feel bad that I did the thing I just did. If it wasn't an astronaut, maybe I wouldn't have even done the story, though. It's because it was space and astronauts and stuff. Interplanetary shipping fees was a great phrase. Maybe I just wanted to say that on the podcast. So they need ways to gather the information without relying on people reporting it. So there's like organizations, like financial institutions, they'll report websites they find. And they will find, last year, they found 490,000 cases. And this was reported by antivirus software and this sort of group of financial institutions. Now, last year in total, it was 1.2 million reports of phishing. So you can assume that number's got to be plus 2 million. Like, attempts, not even success or anything, but just attempts at phishing. So this is a 21 times increase from 2019. Weird choice. I don't know. I guess they're trying to go for dramatic numbers. But what they want to do is get an AI, and the AI is just going to trawl the internet, trawl these emails, trawl this other stuff, recognize the phishing websites, and then automatically report that to the police so they can shut it down. And that is maybe one of the best use cases of AI I have heard so far, because it's actually helping people, you know, not get ripped off. Oh no. See, as soon as I start talking about this stuff, and then I have thoughts. And my thought is they're going to have AI create the phishing websites to be more efficient. And when an AI shuts one down, another AI automatically just rebuilds a new website. So it becomes like a cycle that just never stops. There were the World Cup qualifiers. And in the Asian area, in Asia, Japan has to play North Korea. So they decided to do the game. I don't know how these decisions are made. This is FIFA or something. The game is going to be done in North Korea. Now, North Korea and Japan have very hostile political relations. So the Japanese government says, hey, Japanese citizens who are really excited about soccer. Soccer is a very popular sport in Japan. Don't go to North Korea. Don't go to North Korea to watch this game. Don't try to get it. I mean, they have to get a visa. I'm pretty sure North Korea wouldn't be giving Japanese people visas to go in anyways. That's a totally separate issue. But the government just came out and said, don't try to go to North Korea. I think that's a fair statement to make. The relationship between Japan and North Korea is so contentious that it would be dangerous for a Japanese citizen to enter the country. So they have the soccer game. So the soccer players go and they have like some people with them, sort of handlers and stuff. They play their game. And Japan scores a goal in the first 90 seconds. Yay, Japan. Then nothing happens for the rest of the game. So 2 hours or assume, I don't know how long a soccer game is, like 90 minutes. No scores are done for the rest of the game because it's soccer. So of course there are no more goals. I understand the reality in that the tension would build as they get closer and closer to the end of the game and have to score one goal to just become even and extend the game. But I don't really enjoy soccer. So for me, that just sounds mind-numbingly painful. It's just low-scoring, zero-scoring games. Essentially, what I'm saying is, fuck you, soccer. North Korea, in North Korea, loses a soccer game in front of a stadium of people. Now, North Korea has, in the past, reported that they have won all the Olympic gold medals. If you actually watch North Korean state media, they have just straight out and said, North Korea has won every game in the Olympics and stuff like that. China's number two, and America has won nothing. So they just, like, it's just a blatant lie. But when you have a stadium of people watch your team lose, you can't really lie to the same degree. It's much harder. So they need a solution because they can't lose again. They're actually supposed to play two games and they can't lose again. So they need to end this game. So they do what North Korea does best. They say, we are concerned about a second game. Oh, we are canceling the second game because we are worried about a malignant infectious disease in Japan. And I think that malignant infectious disease might be winning. Again, I'm not a big fan of soccer, so I'm not wicked supportive of Japanese soccer or anything like that. I don't actually care about sports or who wins and stuff, but I do think it's funny. I think it's funny that we didn't win the first game, so we're going to cancel the second game, and we're going to say that it's because you foreigners are diseased, which is a lot. Since we're talking about soccer, there was a student, and he has Peruvian background. He's got a mixed heritage, yes. And so that, in Japan, makes you stand out. He was late for a club activity, and the coaches made him apologize. And when he apologized, they started making derogatory statements. They said, Peruvians can apologize, huh? Which doesn't sound bad translated into English, but the reality is how you say it in Japanese is more insulting than what you say. Or it's not what you say in Japanese, it's how you say it, it becomes the insult. So when we translate a lot of Japanese insults into English, it sounds just like a statement. But it's the statement of, like, I'm talking down to you is the important part. Another coach, giving guidance on his attitude, so sort of giving him guidance about life, says, you'll end up being a murderer. And then, like, makes a stabbing gesture to one of his teammates, like, you're going to kill your teammate. I guess maybe the kid got frustrated. Like, I'm just guessing because they only fill in all the details. But the kid's frustrated or angry or having difficulty, or he's, like, hormonal because he's a teenager. I mean, who knows? Because if you are who you are, you're going to end up being a murderer, which is a pretty awful thing to say. The interesting thing is the guy who made the murder statement had been disciplined in 2019 for threats and slapping a student, but then was removed from soccer coaching and then returned. So the question to me is, why are these guys returning? This is not the first time we've done a coach abuses kids, gets taken out and then put back in and starts abusing kids again story. Once you have smacked a kid, I think you shouldn't be allowed around kids anymore so you can continue to smack them. Japan, I don't know, maybe they keep track of it. They don't keep track of it. It's a bit insane. They did 100 member surveys. So all these kids who've been in the soccer clubs over the last couple of years in 2023. And all the coaches received voluntary suspensions. Which is pretty ridiculous. I don't know... Why do these people go into kids' stuff if they clearly are easily frustrated with kids? We've had the teachers who are smacking kids because the kids are talking back to them. I understand that frustration. I've never hit a kid. We got these guys who become coaches. Coaching is primarily working with kids, and they seem to have a problem with kids. These may be more lean towards the just we're just racist dudes because you're not a Japanese kid. I'm going to judge you differently kind of thing. But even then, like, why are you there? Don't. Like, go find your Puritan group. I don't know. I'm a little lost on that one because it's like, how do these stories keep happening when it's so obvious that there's a problem there, when the problem could be solved by just don't get into that job in the first place? So these coaches cause people a lot of stress. They feel a lot of stress. Now, all right, we got a 25-year-old guy. He takes a can of kerosene into the mountain forest, and he douses several trees in kerosene and then lights them on fire. He gets arrested, and he does the most classic excuse for a Japanese person who's done something wrong. And he says, I was stressed out. And lighting fires relieves tension, which I struggle with. I mean, has he tried stretching? Maybe has he tried stretching? There are degrees of stress and ways to deal with it. So I'm not going to say drink alcohol, but I would say, comparatively speaking, if you had to drink alcohol to relieve your stress or light a forest on fire, I might actually say drinking is your better option. I would say before that, maybe go get a massage, maybe start stretching, do a little yoga, something like that. I think there are stages you should go through before you jump to burn down a forest. Now, I found it interesting that his statement wasn't lighting this fire or, you know, I lit a fire and it relieved tension. He said that lighting fires relieves tension, as in he's done this in the past. So the police are now investigating several suspicious fires in forests in the surrounding area. So I'm guessing this is lucky. This happened in February, which is a very wet season in Japan. So if it's not snowing, it's probably raining, that kind of stuff. So that probably kept the forest fire from getting out of control. But oh my God, I've done this story before. The classic Japanese excuse, I've committed a crime. Why did you commit the crime? Stress from work or just stress. But now you're getting arrested. That has created more stress in your life. So there is maybe a moment where you've committed the crime and it feels slightly better. But then there's the stress of, am I going to get caught? Are the police going to catch on? Am I going to get reported? Like, I actually think that would be more stressful. I think committing a crime and getting away from it might be just as much stress as getting stress from work. And then if you're already working and you commit a crime, now you have to think about both. I have stress from work where I go to my job every day. And I have the stress of worrying about whether or not I'm going to get caught for the crime I've committed. That's a lot of stress. And then how do you relieve that stress? You go light more forest fires. The more forest fires you light, the more likely you are to get caught. This is the criminal paradox. If you are successful in a crime and you commit the crime again multiple times, each time you commit it, you're more likely to make mistakes or get caught or have something go wrong and then go to jail. So your stress should actually go up the more successful you are in crime, which is interesting. But it doesn't seem to work that way. And so now the guy is going to get stressed out in prison. All right, so last week we did the LDP, had a party, and in that party they're like, some go-go girls came out and the politicians put money in their mouth and then the girls took the money out of their mouth. And there were some other pictures that showed up and it was them sticking it in their bikini bottoms and stuff. Pretty gross stuff for a group that is supposed to be like moving towards more egalitarian and wants to be more open and inviting and that stuff. This was, to me, very 80s bubble era Japanese behavior. But the guys who organized the parties were full on in their prime in the 70s and 80s. So they mentally had not moved on to like, hey, maybe women who come to this party won't like it. I almost guarantee no women showed up to that party. Maybe some of the young men don't have the same sensibilities we do. That's actually showed up many times when we've talked about stories. These really gross old men don't understand that other men maybe don't think the same way as them, which is an interesting issue because we had that mayor who committed like 100 sexual assaults at work. Like he was patting bottoms and touching boobs and sexually harassing everybody around him. His cohort, the deputy mayor, was like, dude, you got to stop. And he was like, yeah. If you've listened to that episode, you'll just go back and listen to that whole like 2 minutes of me doing like gross, creepy laughing. He didn't think the other guy was serious. And like, this is literally your peer telling you, you got to stop or you're going to get in trouble. And then he got in trouble. And he's like, well, I still don't understand what I did wrong. So there's been another scandal has come out with the LDP party because these people are these people. They can't help but do what they do. I found it funny that it was the LDP Federation Youth Bureau. And four of these guys organized a party and they go to the party and there are people taking pictures. And that to me was one of the issues. Like I talk about a lot of crimes and stuff and I'm like, don't film your crimes, but you can't commit crimes where other people are taking pictures either. So a magazine came out with pictures of this party. Great. So what is the picture of? It's a man in a mask, rope tied wearing underwear and the bureau chief wearing an AKB idol costume with a microphone. So clearly on stage doing some sort of announcement in I'm going to go ahead and assume a schoolgirl uniform of some sort in front of, I don't know if it's an LDP guy or a model or someone else, but someone tied up behind him basically naked. And this is cool. This is like high-level politicians who are aware of implications and optics and how things go. When questioned, he said it's just a bar. It's not an S&M club. And then he resigned. The thing is, the sign above the bar was like, we have, what was it, turtle binding, which is a form of S&M. So they clearly put on S&M shows. And he's like, no. That clearly branded S&M bar isn't an S&M bar. It's just a bar. And even if it was an S&M bar, that doesn't mean you have to do the S&M stuff. It doesn't mean you have to like dress up like a schoolgirl and get on stage with a microphone and start participating. That's just ridiculous. I quit. So this actually led to a whole bunch of series of questions. The last party, the one with the go-go dancers, was not publicly funded. This was, everyone chipped in, they paid for their own way. So technically not as bad. This one though, it's supposed to be 5,000 yen per person for entry. And this time they charged 2,000 yen per person. And the same day as the party, an assembly member received 100,000 yen of public funds from an activity fund. And the activity funds are how they get around this. The activity fund is money for events. So that isn't really regulated the same way. So they don't necessarily check out what the event is for. It's like, oh, we're going to have dinner with the LDP guys. Okay, here's, you know, your 50,000 yen, whatever. But this is 100,000 yen to go to the S&M bar. And so this has put another just sort of strike. The LDP rating, approval rating, is at an all-time low. It's like below 20%, which is Japanese politics. It's never above 50. But if you're below 20, you've really, really kicked it. And Kishida is just struggling because how is he supposed to say, like, we want to do good things, we're good people, and then these scandals keep coming up again and again, and now using public money. The public money part is going to be the part that actually kills them, because this has happened before in different areas. And Japan is like, you do your dirty stuff, sure, but don't use my money to do your dirty stuff. When you take my money to do your dirty stuff, I don't want you to be a politician anymore. Sure, man, you could ask. I'm finished that story. Go ahead and ask questions. You're more than welcome to ask questions. I'm going to wait for a second, though, because I was just about to start a second story. Unless you're trying to sell me something, then I'm going to get furious. What do I think if someone joined a secret society? That question is unclear, because what is the secret society? So like there's several secret societies that sort of conspiracy theories go out about, the Freemasons, but the Freemasons are primarily a charitable organization. If you take what they say to be true, but people, because they're secretive about what they do, that leads to conspiracy theories and suspicion. There are religious groups, there's things like that. So secret society is such a broad term that doesn't actually give me any information to answer your question. So the nature of the secret society is the important part. If it's a secret society that's supposed to be good, trying to do good in the world, why would I have a problem with that? Because you want to keep it secret, it's fine. If it's a secret society that wants to harm people, then it's bad. It's not a very interesting answer, I'm sorry. But the truth is, realistically speaking, whether it's secret or not is irrelevant. The important part is the intent of the society in the first place.